On today's episode of The Good Word with Goodwill, Yahoo Sports NBA draft analyst Kristen Peek joins us to talk about her rookie rankings, what's happening with Bronny James and the USC Trojans, and who we should be watching heading into March Madness. All that and much more coming up on today's episode of The Good Word. Just a heads up, you will hear a few clicks and pops in Kristen's audio. We tried our best to get rid of them, but it was just a technical glitch. The conversation is still good, and hopefully the technical issues don't stop you from enjoying it. Now, on to the show.
Good Word with Goodwill on Yahoo Sports. Ball don't lie. And here is Vince Goodwill.
Welcome to The Good Word. My name is Vincent Goodwill, senior NBA reporter for Yahoo Sports and the host of this show. We are part of the Ball Don't Lie podcast. Get us wherever you get your podcast. We are doing things a little different this week. Normally, Wednesday is a solo show. But today, because there are no NBA games and it is the All-Star break, and thank goodness we were not in Salt Lake City, I am bringing in my friend, one of the great twins of Yahoo Sports, because for whatever reason, we got a few of them here, Kristen Peek, our NBA draft analyst, who travels all around the U.S. and likes being in dingy gyms all across the country. I'm glad you are home, KP. How you doing?
I can't believe you just said Salt Lake City like that after spending 3-4 days in Indy with how the weather was there. I'm great, Vinny. Happy to be here. Happy to be home.
I mean, are you trying to say that Salt Lake City compares favorably to Indianapolis?
Absolutely. Absolutely, I am.
You don't remember All-Star last year. That's all. It's okay.
I do. The weather was great. There was no snow. There was no wind that cut you to your bones. And everybody had a great time.
Lie, lie, lie. The lie detector test shows that was a lie, which means it must be draft season because all the lies are happening right now. And we're going to get to that in a minute. And we're going to get to the G League Ignite and some things that are developing there after All-Star weekend. But first, KP, your power five or your top five rookies came out. I think the last time you did them was the first week of February, right?
Yeah, right before the All-Star break, yep.
Right. So Victor Wembanyama, who I think is going to run away with the award, is one. And Chet, who I really love, is at two. Brandon Miller, who you told me before the draft, you were like, Vinny, he's going to be really good. Wherever he goes, he's going to be really good. So you get a point for that. And then you get the two surprises of Keontae George and Derek Lively. Go.
So what people don't understand about power rankings, because I had people coming at me in my mentions, like, where's Jaime Jaquez Jr.? Where's Brandon Pozinski? But when you look at what they've done from the last time I did the power rankings to now in the month of January, they weren't as effective. You got Keontae George tying the rookie record of most threes made in a game when he had 9 threes and 33 points. You have Derek Lively being a pick and roll master with Luka. You know, consistently, there's been no lull in their season at all. So that's why those two are in the top five and not the other. I understand that maybe when we're looking at all rookie NBA and first team rookie, whatever that award is, Pods and Jaime might sneak into that. But for rookie ranking purposes, Keontae George, Derek Lively, you guys get the nod. Brandon Miller has been playing excellent in Charlotte. Charlotte's not winning a ton of games, but everything that was NBA scouts criticized about him in the pre-draft process, he's showing that it's not a problem. The physicality, finishing through contact, and creating off the dribble, especially from three-point range. He was more of a catch-and-shoot guy in college. Now he's being more creative. So I think he is going to consistently stay in that top three range right behind, like you said, Victor, who's running away with it, and Chet, who's the clear number two. And then, you know, the rest of it is just kind of like, pick your poison, you know, from 6 to 10, it's anybody's game.
Well, it's funny. I remember, KP, one of your first rookie power rankings, and I saw Asar Thompson in it and Marcus Sasser in it, and they both have had ups and downs, and Jaime Jaquez Jr. And it seems like, explain to people just the ups and downs of a rookie season as opposed to, you know, when you come in and just being immediately pro ready, because this is a super long grind for them more than anybody. 82 games, right?
Absolutely. And that seems to be the commonality anytime I talk to any rookies, you know, when I'm talking to Jaime, when I'm talking to Keyontae, even talking to Asar, it's, you know, you go from either overtime elite, the pro or the college route to playing a game every other night. And it's learning, okay, recovery. How do I best take care of my body so I'm ready to go every single night? And then it's situational. Like when you're in Detroit and you're losing game after game after game, when you're in Houston, you're not winning a lot. That kind of gets you down mentally. So it's the mental hurdle as well. How do I get over that? How am I able to compete every night and be productive, and what's being asked for me in my first year?
Now, speaking of a lot of losing, right? Memphis is almost taking like a gap year, so to speak. But, and with those who don't know, of course, Ja Morant being out for the year, he had the suspension to start the season. They were really behind the eight ball. And then he had surgery after a reasonably promising start. But with all the losing and all those injuries, Gigi Jackson, a second round pick, he's had a monster January going into February.
I love to see it. Gigi Jackson, when he was a junior in high school, he was the number one ranked junior in the country, you know, competed up a level for Team USA in the U18s, got to play with, you know, Anthony Black, Keyontae, Khalil Ware was on that team. And he was just comfortable. He was comfortable in himself. He was comfortable in the situation. Then what happened? He reclassified up a grade. He was originally committed to North Carolina, decided to decommit from North Carolina, committed to South Carolina. It was not a good situation for him. And when I saw him during the pre-draft last year, he was just down. And it was really weighing on him. So I was really hoping he would go to the right situation. And Memphis, it turns out, at pick number 45, has been the best situation for him. Memphis got a steal of a deal. They got a kid that if he had stayed in his original high school class, an original draft class, he could have been a top five pick this year, top 10 pick this year. And they got him for cheap, you know, and he's been so productive in his first year. They just signed him for a 4-year, $8.5 million contract, and well-deserved, because he's showing that, you know, you shouldn't have written him off. There were a lot of teams that were worried about his attitude and how he was going to take being an NBA player and just the maturity of it. And he's been absolutely fantastic for the Grizzlies.
Now, a guy that we haven't talked about, you just talked about the 45th pick. I'm going to go back a mere 42 selections and ask you about Scoot Henderson, because A, he came from the G League Ignite, which is one of those things we're going to talk about very shortly. But the situation in Portland was always going to be a little rocky because he wasn't the best point guard even on the roster. That seemed to be Ant Simons. And he had a rough start to the season. It seems like now he's starting to come around. He's starting to be able to read things a little bit better and shoot a little bit better. What are you seeing from him?
With Scoot, I mean, he entered the season with an injury. And so it was a slow start because of that. And also, like you said, just the dynamic and the backcourt, trying to find the chemistry with Anthony Simons. And I think for Scoot, you know, he was someone in the G League who was just go, 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 go. He wanted to get downhill every chance he got. He was finding more success in creating separation to get shots off. He wasn't doing that successfully, you know, in the first few games, getting his shot blocked constantly. You know, so for him, I think as the season goes on, the game is slowed down for one. It's slowed down for him. He's been able to be more selective in his spots and where he wants to attack. And also, he's become a better passer. I think everything is just kind of taking him a little bit longer to adjust. But I think it's so unfair, especially in the first half of a rookie season, for people to point and be like, you're a bust. Charlotte got it right with Brandon Miller. We were right about you. You know, like, come on, give these kids 1 to 2 years before we start putting the B word around them.
Yeah, and it's weird. We are quick to give guys a bust in the beginning. And then towards the end, with some guys, we're like, maybe he's not in the right situation. If you're 4 years in and approaching restricted free agency, we kind of know who you are. Now, KP, you were at All-Star with me.
Yep.
One guy out of that whole unserious weekend, there was one guy I thought who took everything serious that he was in. Our boy, Big Vic, right? he did not look like he was a fan of our guy Ant-Man taking left-handed threes in that skills challenge. This guy hates, I don't know if he loves to win, but it sure looks like he hates to lose.
He hates losing. That's the very first thing he said when they lost to the semifinal game, when Modest Bozelis hit that baseline jumper in the semifinals in the Rising Stars Challenge for them to go in and the G League team to go play Chet and those guys. And Victor comes to the podium. First thing he says is, I hate losing. I wish it would have been different, you know, and it's just like, this is just a fun game. But to Victor, it's everything. He is so, I talked to his trainer, you know, over the weekend for a story. And he said, and this is a guy, Tim Martin, he's worked with Trae Young, Dwayne Wade, Tyrese Maxey, and Victor Wembanyama. And he said, Victor Wembanyama mentally is built different than anybody he's ever worked with. The way he approaches the game is different, and he is just on all the time. It doesn't matter if it's a game of horse, a game of ones, a game of half court knockout. Even during the practice when they were trying to hit trick shots, you could see him like shaking his head like, oh God, I can make this shot. I can make this shot. Like everything to him, basketball wise, when you are in between those stripes, like he is on, and it's not goofing around. I'm going to shoot shots left-handed like Ant-Man, which I love. I think it's hilarious, but not to Victor.
Oh, no, I think it's hilarious, too. But for someone who says Ant-Man is going to be the future of the league, the future face of the league, I just wanted him to take it just a little more seriously, just for me, so I could look good. You know, my own selfish reasons. But KP, we're also going to talk about some college basketball, because in addition to the dingy gyms, you like going to those other gyms, right? And you have I think you're about to publish an article on Yahoo Sports about the biggest surprises and biggest disappointments in college ball this year. So I'm guessing UConn, big surprise.
Yeah, I mean, they lost to Creighton last night. Before that, they had won 14 games in a row. And, you know, they're in the Big East, and the Big East is really, really good this year. You know, Creighton beat them by nearly 20 points. They played a almost perfect game. But before that, when you look at UConn and what they lost last year, they lost Jordan Hawkins. They lost a couple of other bigs, but they also brought in Stephen Castle. They brought in a transfer in Cam Spencer. Tristan Newton started off the season hot, shooting fantastic from deep. Donovan Klingon seems to be back, the big 7'2" guy. He's been dealing with nagging injuries. But this is a team that could legit make another run for a national title, become back-to-back. And they're the favorite. They're number one in the country right now. And I don't know how that's going to pan out when the rankings come out next Monday. But they by far are the best basketball team in college basketball right now. And really, really fun to watch because they're impossible to guard.
Well, this is right around the time that I start taking college basketball a little more seriously. You know, yes. You only have like so much bandwidth throughout the course of an NBA season where you're all the way locked in. Like you kind of pay attention in the beginning with all the special tournaments, and then you kind of fall off because the NBA season goes. And then right around now going into March, for your own gambling purposes, I should say, you know, you start paying a little more attention, right? So
yes.
One other thing that I know that you've noticed is because of the transfer portal, a lot of these guys who are hopping around, they're finding homes and showing that they've made the right decisions.
Honestly, probably the best story in college basketball this year has to be Tennessee guard Dalton Connect, who started out in Colorado, high school prospect, no D1 offers, went to a JUCO his first year, then got picked up by Northern Colorado, which was about 30, 40 minutes away from where he grew up. And then he started going crazy at Northern Colorado, entered the transfer portal for his senior season. And he had teams. He was the biggest name in the transfer portal. And you've probably never even heard of him. And that's fine. But he had Tennessee, North Carolina, Kansas, all just wanting him for his senior year. And he decided to go to Tennessee. And he has been absolutely phenomenal. He's super tough, tough as nails. Defense has improved. He's the number one option offensively, and he's playing himself in what he's doing this season into a first round pick in the upcoming draft.
Now, of course, with KP, I have to ask all the important, very difficult questions. Like, what in the hell is going on with USC? Like, look, Bronny James is his own discussion, but
yes.
Isaiah Collier, who I think was number one on a lot of people's big boards going into this season. A lot of returning players, like something isn't clicking over there.
It was so weird to see, Vinny, because I actually called one of their games with their European tour when they went to Croatia and Greece, and they looked great. There was harmony in the backcourt between Boogie Ellis and Isaiah Collier. They were moving the ball. They were hitting threes. The big men were getting offensive boards. And I said, okay, this is going to be a great USC team. Season starts, they go 4-1 to start, and then they start losing. And then they start losing more. And then Isaiah Collier gets hurt. He has a hand injury. Bronny James comes back. He was okay. I actually liked him in the rotation. He brought defensive energy, versatility, and also, you know, three-point shot threat. And they cannot figure it out. I don't know if it was, you know, the time with Bronny out for an extended period of time with his cardiac heart issue, and then mm-hmm. Isaiah being out and not being able to rebound off that. And then once you lose and you lose, you just start to lose confidence. I have no idea what's going on there. They're definitely not going to make the tournament. You can see Bronny's frustration with how he ran off the court after they lost against Arizona State, and he jumped up and he banged his head. You know, he's trying to just get out his frustration. He accidentally banged his head on the top part of the tunnel. And it's just, it's they were up 16 on a tough CU team in the fourth or in this late in the second half, and they lost in overtime. I mean, they can't win, and it's really frustrating to watch.
It's frustrating to watch them. I can see that, because people, you know, the scouts who've gone to the games and you talk to them and they're like, man, like there's something going on there. But Bronny James is his own separate entity for very yes. obvious reasons, right? Question yes. to you, is it a guarantee, in your opinion, that he's going to come out and go into the draft? And B, there feels like there's like a wide swath of opinions on Bronny about what type of pro he's going to be. Do you project him as a solid pro, just a guy that's going to develop and stick around? Is that how you project him? And do you think that he's going to be around in college basketball next year?
Anybody that's been watching Bronny extensively this season, and even if you just glance at his stat line where he's averaging, you know, 5.7 points, 2.6 assists per game, you're thinking, okay, he needs another year of development. You might say that about any other player except LeBron James's son. LeBron has been very vocal about saying, I want to play with my son in the NBA. I want to play with him. And we don't know when LeBron is going to shut it down. You saw him at the press conference. You know, so for teams, especially I think in that late first round into the second round, if there is a chance where they could get LeBron for the farewell tour, pack out stadiums. We've talked about this, Vinny. Like, I went to the McDonald's All-American game last year. I went to Nike Hoop Summit, and people just came to the game to not only see Bronny James on the court, but to see LeBron cheering on his son from courtside. Now, that's they packed the arenas. Imagine if the two of them were playing and it was in a fast break, Bronny throwing LeBron an alley-oop or vice versa. That place is going to go nuts. And for Bronny's credit, I've covered him extensively from the time he was in eighth grade, ninth grade, his time at Sierra Canyon, his time AAU, Strive for Greatness, everything. I've seen him play a lot. And he is a player where he thrives in a system. He's a great secondary player. He's played along other guys like BJ Boston, Zaire Williams, Amari Bailey, and he's a great secondary player. He plays defense. He has a high IQ. He can knock down the open three, and he's a system guy. If he were to stay 4 years at USC, I think we would be saying completely different things about him as a prospect and saying, yes, he is a bona fide pro. So for a team to take a shot on him and not necessarily give him guaranteed money, but know that with him comes LeBron James, I think he could be drafted this year. And I think these are conversations that he's having, that LeBron and Rich Paul, they're all having, if not now, at least heading into the draft. But I think he comes out this year. A lot of teams are asking me about him, and I think he's going to be fine as just like a secondary role player in the NBA.
I mean, like you said, the things that he does well are, it seems like those are things that translates to any NBA team. Like, you can just plug and play him out there. Not that he's going to play 35, 40 minutes a night.
No.
But if you're talking about a perimeter defender who can hit shots and he moves the ball, that sounds like pro skills. It's just the last name and the expectations that come with the last name. How do you think he's handled, A, being the son of LeBron James, and also, two, this guy had a cardiac arrest not that long ago,
yes.
And it's not a huge part of the conversation. Maybe it should be, but it's not.
Yes. To answer your first question, you know, what surprised NBA scouts the most when they first got a chance to see Bronny at McDonald's last year at Hoop Summit, they came away thinking, wow, he seems like a really good teammate. He seems like the players really want to play with him. And they do. Bronny is not someone that walks into the gym and you look at him, you're like, oh gosh, LeBron James's son is here. No, he's just a normal kid. He loves the game of basketball. He, you know, loves the same type of music that everybody likes. I mean, he's not isolating himself. I'm up here. I'm the son of the great, one of the greatest to ever play the game of the basketball, and you guys are all down here. He's always been so great to everyone that he's ever come in interaction with, and he's just a good kid. You know, and so when you have a player like that, that's easy to be around, that's going to be appealing for NBA teams, too, because you know you're going to have zero issues in the locker room. You're going to have zero off the court issues. And he's just going to, you know, just fit right in and not come in with any sort of diva mentality. The cardiac arrest thing, the NBA does a great job doing their due diligence on any player that they're looking at for the draft. And they're absolutely doing that and going through that process with Bronny. There was an article about, you know, the play-by-play of what took place that day, you know, just kind of from everyone that was around him, from when he collapsed for the 30 seconds. He got up after they, you know, got the machine, the defibrillator, whatever that was, because mind you, like the staff had already been through this the summer before with another player. So they knew what to do. And by all accounts, Bronny came to and he said, I want to continue getting shots up. And Eric Mobley, the assistant coach, said, do you understand what just happened? No, we called the ambulance. You got to go get this checked out. And so it wasn't one of those things where his heart stopped. They were rushing. It wasn't anything like that. Like, he actually came to and was mad that he couldn't get back on the court. So then, of course, the James family, what they do is they make sure that everything is checked out. They go to the Mayo Clinic. They get whatever the issue is sorted out. And he's been fine ever since. Like, he's probably getting weekly, monthly checkups. And if NBA teams know this and they see no further issue moving forward, then that's going to be positive for him and his draft stock.
This is going to be really, really interesting because the draft is going to 2 days. So it's going to make the end of the first round really interesting. And then everything leading into the second round, where, not saying he's a second round pick, but just saying it's going to make the back end of the first round really interesting because teams are going to have to think long and hard to make decisions. And it's going to make the top of the second round interesting because you never know who's going to make maneuvers to get to the bottom of the first round. Now,
correct.
A team that has 7 potential NBA players, 2 lottery picks, and Coach Cal coaching them, Kentucky, they're both in surprises and disappointments, KP.
Yes, absolutely. And what I'll tell you, we'll start with the positive first because I'm a half glass full person usually. The biggest surprise has been Kentucky had the number one recruiting class coming in. And at the time, it was led by top 5, top 10 players, DJ Wagner and Justin Edwards. They were the two main, and I guess Aaron Bradshaw, the 7'1" center who played with DJ in high school. Those three were like, oh my gosh, we have these three. They're awesome. Now, as the season progressed, it's the two freshmen coming off the bench that NBA teams are falling in love with. Point guard Rob Dillingham, who is super shifty, loves to get downhill, facilitator, just a dog on the court. Reed Shepard, a Kentucky legacy kid, his mom holds the scoring record for the women's side. His dad won a national championship. And he is just like, has the most insane IQ on defense and offense, is always making the right play. And, you know, when you're looking at something, someone, especially a young player, you want to know what his ceiling is. You want to know what you're getting out of him. NBA teams have no worries at all what they're going to be able to get out of Reed Shepard. Now, on the opposite end of that, you also have transfers. You have you have so much height. You have so much shot blocking. You have seven potential NBA players on the team. Coach Cal cannot figure out how to win consistently this year. And so then it turns to, okay, is this a talent problem? Is this a offensive system problem? Or is this a coaching problem? And the if you talk to any Kentucky fan, you're like, oh my gosh, yeah, but Reed Shepard, Rob Dillingham, you guys, you're going to have two lottery picks. They're like, yeah, but does that equate to a championship? And I think that's where Kentucky fans are getting frustrated. It's like, yes, year after year, we have great young players that we send off to the NBA, but we lose to a 15 seed, but we exit the tournament early. What is this doing for us now? And I think that frustration is starting to mount in Kentucky. And if Coach Cal doesn't figure it out soon, like I don't know what they're going to do in terms of, you know, a coaching change or anything like that. I don't know how many more years he has.
I mean, yeah, Coach Cal is not the same young coach coaching Marcus Camby in Massachusetts and or even Coach Cal in Memphis with Derrick Rose and CDR yes. and all those other guys. Like, even those guys get old. Now, it's funny because Reed Shepard, like you said, is a legacy kid. I think of his daddy because his daddy was a part of a Kentucky team that beat one of the best Duke teams I've ever seen in my life. I think it was the 98 regional semis. They came back. I'm such a geek. They came back from like down 16 in the second half. It was, I think, Elton Brand's Elton Brand's freshman year. Like, it was the year before Duke went like 32-1 the next year. Like, that was such a great era of watching Duke flame out in the tournament. I love those years. And because I just went to March Madness, KP, it's around the corner. A few of us will start watching college basketball intensely for the very first time this season. Give us a few guys that from an NBA perspective and just a entertainment of college basketball perspective that we should really be keeping an eye on.
Okay, first, before I get started, Vinny, I got you for upset teams come tournament time. Okay, just call me. I watch a lot of basketball. It's me and my dog, Gary, on my couch watching really just an obscene amount of college basketball. So I got you. Players to watch in the NCAA tournament. We have to start out with, you know, we talk about Victor Wembanyama being the front runner of Rookie of the Year. The front runner for Player of the Year has to be 7'4" center Zach Edey out of Purdue. He is unstoppable. Double team, triple team. He's so tough. He's leading the country in, actually, I think he's second in the country in points, second in the country in rebounds, but leading the Big Ten in both fields, 23-11. And he's one of those guys that there are some people, NBA draft experts, that like him in the first round. I am not one of them. I think he's more of a mid-second round prospect. But he has improved his footwork. He has improved his conditioning. And he's just fun to watch. Purdue is a really fun team to watch. When you're looking at the guard position, I love a comeback story. I love a player that takes literally like all 4 years to figure it out. And that is RJ Davis of North Carolina. He is definitely going to be the front runner for ACC Player of the Year. If there's anyone that's going to give Zach Edey kind of a run for Player of the Year, it's RJ Davis. North Carolina defensively is insane. The way they just pressure the ball constantly throughout the game. And the tandem between him and Armando Bacot, the walking double-double and the pick and roll, the pick and pop, it's so hard to defend. RJ Davis, his decision-making is incredible. And I think it's really going to help him. I had an NBA draft scout or NBA scout text me and say, I think RJ Davis could get drafted. And they had written him off completely. You know, his first 3 years as a prospect because of his size and the way he just couldn't make decisions right away. And then you got to look, you just talked about Duke. We got to hit on Duke. Kyle Filipowski.
We have to.
Kyle Filipowski, the sophomore center, he elected to come back. A lot of people thought it was, oh, okay, yeah, he's going to have another year of development after shooting only 26, 27% from three and get one more year under his belt in a weaker draft class. No, the dude had double hip surgery. He had to return for his sophomore season, and he looks much better for it. like he's more mobile. They run a ton of offense through him. He loves the face up, two dribble, spin move, finish on the right side. He's really tough. And the freshman that everybody is raving about at Duke is Jared McCain, who just tied the freshman record of most points scored by a Duke freshman with 35 points. And the player that held that previously was Zion Williamson. So he had an okay freshman year at Duke as well. But, you know, Jared is someone that we're starting to see.
It's all going downhill since then, though.
Yes. No, I just said at Duke. That's it. I stopped there. But Jared is someone that's sneaking into the first round. Really fun guard to watch. Will let it fly from anywhere. And just is he does whatever it takes to win. He's really fun to watch.
Well, hopefully in the 6 months that Jared McClain is there, they will teach him how to stay out of DMs and stay away from Burberry shirts.
Yes.
You get the reference. Now, let's pause for a moment for some ads. And after this, we'll come back talking about the future of the G League Ignite. Welcome back to The Good Word with Kristen Peek. KP, we were both in Indy at Lucas Oil Stadium where Adam Silver did his, you know, State of the NBA address. And one of the interesting questions came about the future of the G League Ignite, especially in the wake of all the NIL stuff in college basketball. And A, we have to say, in the new collective bargaining agreement where people thought high school kids were going to be able to come straight to the draft, that did not happen. There's still the age limit. And now in the wake of all of this new way to make money in college basketball, has the G League Ignite become more obsolete quickly or more quickly than anyone could have ever expected?
It's funny because when we looked at the G League Ignite this season, coming into this season, and you looked at the talent that they had, Ron Holland was a projected top two, top three pick. Modest Buzelis, top five pick. You even had Ethan Amansa, Tyler Smith from the Overtime Elite. They were considered first round picks. Cherry Darlin from NBA Academy in Africa. He was considered a first round pick. And so you had all of these NBA scouts that were excited to go see their exhibition games in September when the Perth Wildcats came over from Australia to play in a pair of games. I was there. There were about 100 NBA scouts and executives. And it was Alex Sarr, the 7'1 center who is French but playing over in Australia, that just completely shocked all NBA scouts and executives. And they were like, okay, this is our guy. This is the guy that we care about, not these players for the Ignite. And then as the season went on with the Ignite, they couldn't win a single game. I was at their first game. They lost by 65 points to the Salt Lake City Stars. 68 points. And you're telling me you guys have five NBA players, three first rounds, two lottery picks, and you lose by 68 points? And so from then, it was just, I would check every box score and they were losing by 30, 40 points. You go to the winter showcase in Orlando and it's just hard to watch. You can't even get a good read for who these prospects are because the games are so lopsided and you don't know how they're going to be in a plug and play situation at the NBA mm-hmm. level. And so for that reason, I mean, you have frustration from the scouts' perspective saying, look, we can't watch this. And then you have frustration from the players' perspective saying, like, this is horrible. We're playing in front of 20 fans each and every night because we can't win games. You have players like Ron Holland, who has a thumb injury, shutting it down for the season. You know, and so you take all that into consideration. They're not making any money. It's not going to be good for recruiting in the future with trying to land other top players. You're competing with NIL. It's no longer, hey, Scoot Henderson, we're going to throw you $1 million for 2 years and you're going to flourish and become a top three pick. Jalen Green, Jonathan Kuminga, come here. You're going to play NBA rules, NBA spacing, and we're going to get you ready for the NBA. That's not going to cut it anymore because of NIL, because of college basketball and how you kind of get more out of scouting, watching them play against peers than you do it with the Ignite, seeing them try to battle maybe some players that are twice their age. So NIL has a lot to do with it. And also the fact that just the competition is so mm-hmm. lopsided and you cannot go and get a good read for these prospects.
Now, it seems like Adam Silver was leaving the door open to significant changes. Adam doesn't really like to hedge in that way. He doesn't like to say things are going to happen and then back away from them. Now, the NBA seems to be investing in the Nike EYBL and the Scholastic League. Is that going to be more prominent than the G League Ignite as we move forward?
I think that's going to be a focus for sure. I mean, you know, when you saw the NBA start to broadcast games from Peach Jam this past year with Cooper Flagg, with AJ DeBonta coming up, Dylan Harper coming up, you know, that's showing an investment in the youth. And then when the EYBL started the Scholastic League this year with the top 10, top 12 high school teams, high school prep teams in the country, allowing NBA scouts to go to certain events. So I called the games in Las Vegas when there were, you know, several games played during the in-season tournament, kind of pairing that with the NBA. I think we're going to see more of that. The NBA Global Academy has really showed some progress in terms of prospects coming out of those situations. So when Adam Silver talked about investing in youth and development, he really was honing in on, you know, the difference between European and America, and in America, it's highlight culture. It's not necessarily development. And a lot of people took offense to that, but he's not wrong. He's not wrong at all. It's hurting our development. Look at the draft this year, Vinny. I know you don't know a lot about it, but there's a lot of international prospects that are projected towards the top, not college players. And that says
there's
a lot
name
about
here
the
that sounds like a. There's two names here that sounds like food. There's, really, there's literally two names that sound like food, right? And I don't know if John is actually. I'm sure John has spelled the names right. Cause no, actually, you spelled the names right because you put
the
them
name
in
right.
One of the Zachary.
Yep.
And I don't know how to pronounce that last name, but
Rich
you go ahead.
Share. Rich Share.
That sounds like New Orleans food. Okay, right? And then the other guy, Tijan.
Tijan.
Okay. I was close, right?
Tijan. Yes. Tijan Salon, Zachary Rich Share. Yes. Both French prospects. Then we got Nikola Topic coming out of Serbia. Anyways, all that to say, it wouldn't surprise me if an NBA academy in the States was started to try to compete in the same development with the NBA Academy in Australia, the one, I think they have another one in, I know there's one in Africa. I know they have three or four around the world. So they've seen success with that. And then also investing in the EYBL and youth in that respect.
Now, call me crazy, KP. And maybe I'm just an old, you know, maybe I'm an old white man, right? Maybe I'm an old white man, a traditionalist, okay? But is there something to the connective tissue of college basketball leading into the NBA where fans get a chance to know who these players are for a couple of years and then they realize, oh, okay, they're going to the NBA. I can connect with them. It's not like, you know, don't get me wrong. Victor Wembanyama is a phenom in a completely different way. He didn't need to play college basketball, but I feel like a better college basketball product makes for a better NBA product. No disrespect to the G League Ignite and the Overtime Elite and everything else, but is college basketball the best source of American development going into the NBA?
That is a very interesting point. And I think, yes, you're right. And here's the thing. Everyone always wants to say, I knew him when. So say you're a Duke fan. You are right now investing in Cooper Flagg and what he's doing at Mount Verde Academy, because he's going to go to Duke. He's the projected number one pick in the draft. So say he's at Duke. The next year, maybe it's, I don't know what team, if it's going to be Detroit again, if it's going to be Washington again, and they're continuing to lose games. If you are a Detroit fan and you don't want to see your team lose night after night, you are going to start watching Duke games. It's just, it's easier. It's accessible. You're not going to go on the NBA app, or you're not going to go on online and try to find an international game to see Nikola Topic or any of these other guys, right? It's the accessibility of the game from college to high school, you can find games, and from NBA to college, you can find games to watch the next prospects coming up.
Yeah, and it's a thing about like trusting in brands. Even if you don't really know college basketball like that, you know Duke, you know North Carolina, you know that those teams mean something. So if someone's playing for that team and they're good, then you trust in their ability to translate that to the next level. As opposed to, like you said, maybe you have to go to an app to watch you know, an overtime elite game where you got to find, you got to search to find it somewhere as opposed to it being on one of the traditional big box networks. Do you think that the G League Ignite will actually still exist a few years from now? Do you think that will be, or do you just think it will be repurposed and look different?
I mean, you could say yes to either situation. If they can't get players, no, it shut it down. You know, if they can't get these elite players to come and trust their development and trust what they're trying to build for the Ignite in order to prepare them for the best for the NBA, then no, they're going to have to shut it down because no players equals nothing. So if you are going all in, all chips in on AJ DeBonta, who right now is the number one junior in high school and the second best prospect, regardless of class, behind Cooper Flagg. If you don't land AJ DeBonta and he chooses to go the college route, then it's over. It's game over. And then you, but you see Overtime Elite, they've adjusted. They had a Menin Issar for pre-draft. They tried to go that pro route. They've now pivoted and made it more of a prep situation where high school players come, they keep their eligibility. They're in Atlanta, they're in Georgia, they're in a state where you're allowed to have NIL deals. So some of them, some of the best players, five-star Carter Knox, who's a McDonald's All-American, Kevin Knox's little brother, he has a deal with Adidas. You know, so you're still able to play amongst peers, get that NIL money, and keep your college eligibility.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, is Kristen Peake from Salt Lake City. You are the biggest Salt Lake City ambassador I have ever known in my life. Wait, you might be the only Salt Lake City ambassador I've ever actually met. And I'm glad
I'm never here, Vinny. I'm never here. Stop that.
Yes, KP, you are the, you don't live there. You live like out of a hotel and in a suitcase and in all these high school gyms. So, you know, I get it. But KP, of course, gives us all of the great coverage of the college basketball season and the upcoming NBA draft and the prospects who will be a part of it here at Yahoo Sports. Anything else you want to promote, KP?
I have a story on Keyonte George coming up. Obviously, college basketball right around the corner. And, you know, hit me up if you want some upset alerts in the tournament. I got a couple for you, Vinny, but that's in a few weeks.
Yes, I don't partake in much gambling, but I will fill out a bracket for fun. I'll just say that. Just for fun. You know, just for fun. But that is Kristen Peake, guys. Thanks to producer John and the entire team that works behind the scenes on this podcast. No Cap Room will be back tomorrow, and I will be back on Monday for another episode of The Good Word. Until then, everybody be safe.